Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you as well. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Preds forward Matt Duchesne. Looking forward to that conversation. As a matter of fact, we have Matt Duchesne on the line right now. So let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and go inside the locker room, brought to you by Gary Ashton Remax Advantage and Social Furniture. Stop by Social Furniture today and see their new sofas they got in today on Charlotte Avenue. Matt, what's going on? How are we doing?
Hey, good. How about yourself?
We are great. We appreciate you taking time to join us. Let's start with this. How was the break during All-Star break? And we got to get to the bottom of the outfits that you and Philip Forsberg posted. Whose idea was that? And are you taking fashion advice from Forsberg now? Because that could be a dangerous game.
No, definitely not taking advice from him. Definitely not. Yeah, we went to Miami, a few of us. Honestly, we didn't plan that. Those, like, kind of I guess beach outfits are pretty in right now, I guess. So my wife actually bought me mine, and we had a day out on a boat plan, so saved up for that. And obviously Phil had a similar idea, but we thought it was pretty funny, so we got a picture together.
That's good stuff. Well, obviously back at it tonight against the Stars. Matt, I'm just curious, from your vantage point, you know, February's light for you guys, comparatively speaking to a lot of other teams around the league, and then it ramps up really big in March and April. Just kind of your viewpoint on the position that you guys are in and where you guys sit right now as, I guess, the unofficial second half of the season begins.
Yeah, obviously we really like our we really like our where we're at right now. I think we've done a really good job this point of the season. We're having a lot of fun. We've put ourselves in a really good spot. Having said that, our division seems to win. Every team seems to win every single night. And, so you can't really, it kind of feels like, you know, the last kind of 15 games where all the teams that are pushing for a spot are winning games, and you got to keep pace. So it feels like that early on this year. And I think the big thing for us is we got to keep, you know, the pedal down, and we got to get right back to it tonight. So, you know, and the other thing too is there's no satisfaction from our team. I think it's just we remain hungry, and like I said, we're happy with where we're at, but we're not satisfied yet, and there's lots of hockey to be played. So you know, between us, Colorado, Minnesota, St. Louis, I mean, any of us could win the division, and you know, it's going to be a crime that one of us will finish in a wild card spot by the looks of it right now. So pretty wild, and but at the same time, it just shows how strong our league is and how our division is kind of going right now. So back at it tonight.
So, Matt, obviously you guys are having really strong individual seasons here, but it just seems like collectively your line, like there's another level of feel for each other. Would you agree with that? And what is that process like? Like, what has happened along the way for it to look that way? I know some of it's on the power play as well, but it just seems like you guys really have a feel for where you're going to be on the ice at times.
Yeah, I think, you know, I still think there's areas for us to improve in that as well. I think we're trending in the right direction, but I think we've got even more in the tank. And I mean, I think you've got, you know, three guys that see the game pretty similarly and work well together. We always have from the time you know, I kind of got here and we got put together. So it's nice to really have some consistency playing together. And like I said, I think we're doing well, but I think we can even take that next step and become one of the, you know, elite lines in the league. You know, I think we're on our way right now, but I think, like I said, to get to that point where it's every night, it's multiple goals, it's one of those things where it's almost automatic. I think we got, you know, another step to take. And I think it's exciting to, you know, continue to work with those two guys and do that.
Press forward, Matt Duchesne on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Matt, obviously we've talked to you a lot this year about your production individually, and, you know, you've had some great stretches in your career, and I've been a good player for a long time. I'm just curious from your vantage point, confidence wise, everything that goes into the game, is this maybe the best that you've ever felt playing hockey? Like, how would you kind of answer what this year has been like from you from that standpoint individually so far?
Yeah, I've had a few years where, you know, I think the production was there very similar, but I think right now, you know, goal scoring wise, I'm not sure if I've ever felt more confident. You know, I'm scoring more different ways this year. I made some adjustments to my stick the last couple of last year, actually right before playoffs, and then another little bit over the summer. So I think it's really helped me. It's really helped me shoot the puck better, and so I feel good there. But yeah, again, I still think, you know, there's another level to get to for me, and you know, production wise, and I think a lot of my habits are there, and I'm doing a lot of good things, but. Again, I'm just like the rest of our team. I'm happy, but I'm not satisfied. And it's been, you know, a good year so far. But I really want to take that next step throughout the, you know, the end of the rest of the season here. And you know, this is the kind of the kind of hockey that I know that I can play, you know, night in, night out. And it, right now, honestly, it's autopilot for me. I'm able to put on the gear and go out, do my thing, and you know, I got a great team to back me up. And you know, the confidence is good. So just want to keep that going and again, raise the level even another step or two above where I'm at.
What was the stick adjustment, Matt? Walk us through that if you can. And how important is that? People probably don't think about that a ton.
Yeah, you got to always be trying to get better in any way. And the game changes all the time, so you got to change with it. And for me, I used a really short stick for a long time. It was something that was actually an advantage for me when I did it, you know, 10 years ago. And the game was different. It wasn't as fast as it is now. And you know, so I ended up actually adding about 3 inches to my stick from the start of last year till the start of this year. And just gave me more leverage on the puck, you know, able to have my head up a little bit more, just because it's longer. So the longer your stick is, the more straight up you can be at times when you need to be, and you can, you know, see the ice a little bit better. And shooting, it's just more effortless. So I think you got to make adjustments all the time. I never buy into the when guys say, you know, I've used this my whole life, so I'm just going to keep using it. Well, you know, sometimes that's good, and sometimes, you know, you need to make changes. And you know, for me, I'm always trying to find ways to get better and you know, get any advantage I can. And as the game changes, and you know, my 13 years in the league, the game's probably changed, you know, 5-6 times in terms of how it's played and the speed and the, you know, just different things. And right now, it's a very offensive, fast game where everyone can skate. There's not many. I used to be a guy who beat people one-on-one all the time, and you can't do that anymore because everyone skates so well. There's very, very few guys in the league who beat guys consistently one-on-one every night. So you need to, you know, really think the game well and have, you know, that extra few inches is has been big for me, shooting and, you know, stick handling, passing, everything. So
Matt, I'm just curious from your vantage point. You've talked about, you know, how close this group is and what a tight group you guys have several times so far this year. I'm just interested, how have you seen maybe that translate to on the ice in terms of trust level, in terms of, you know, holding guys accountable? What kind of goes into, you know, having a group as close as you guys are and the way that impacts the way you play on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're that, when you trust each other, and I think that's a great word for it. I think everyone just knows who each other are and trusts that everyone's got great intentions and wants the best for each other. And it doesn't, there's not one guy in that room where I would think any different than that. So that right away, you're able to then, you know, be vulnerable with each other, whether you're talking hockey or anything outside of that. But, you know, I think when you're talking to each other about different things, and you can, you know, you could be, you don't necessarily need to be hard. You don't necessarily be hard on your guys, because I don't think our group really needs that, but we know what's expected from our teammates of each other, and we don't want to let each other down. And I think there's kind of a silent understanding of what each of us needs to do. And so there isn't really any need for that, you know, accountability in terms of guys, bringing stuff up to each other. I think we all know what we need to do, and that's a special thing. So you go on the ice, you know what's expected from you, and you know what you have to do to help this team win. So I think that closeness it's kind of an unspoken thing amongst each other, and I think it's been really great, and it's such a fun group to be around all the time. Where we keep things really light, win or lose, we're very even keel, you know. So we get on the plane after a loss, it's like, you know, oh okay, we lost tonight. We'll get them next game, you know. And that's what you got to, that confidence and that kind of even keel is what you have to have and what good teams have. So I think we've done a really good job of that so far, and we want to keep going.
If there's one element of this team's game, Matt, that you would like to see pick it up a notch here as things get going again, what would it be?
I don't think we have a certain area that we need to really improve on. I think for us, it's just as the games get harder, which happens, teams start to really vie for playoff spots, and really, you know, the games get tighter. It's how do we raise our overall level to get there? And I think that this team is more than up to the task. I think this team is built for playoff hockey, and we seem to play our best games against the best teams. So I have no doubt we'll get there.
Preds forward Matt Duchesne has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Matt, really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Good luck tonight against Dallas, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Duchesne, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, Inside the Locker Room, brought to you by Gary Ashton, Remax Advantage, and Social Furniture. Stop by Social Furniture today and see their new sofas they just got in on Charlotte Avenue. We'll come back. We'll react to what Matt Duchesne had to say there. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you. We are taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Jay Morrison from The Athletic coming up at 9:30. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll look ahead to Super Bowl 56 with him coming up here in just a few minutes. Thanks to Matt Duchesne for joining us in the last segment. The Preds back in action tonight, taking on the Dallas Stars. Interesting stuff there from Matt Duchesne. One thing that has really stood out to me since he's come here, and you know, obviously the journey for Duchesne since he's been here has been way up and down. He started off the first 10-15 games here on fire, and then basically went into a lull for 2 years. From a production standpoint, that it wasn't very good. He's been great again this year. One thing that's always stood out to me about him, and this is why, you know, when he was struggling last year and we took the calls and the texts about, well, he got his money, he got paid, he doesn't care, I always just kind of scoffed at that, because, I mean, the detail this guy goes into in terms of trying to be better and trying to find ways to have an advantage, that's always been something that stands out to me about him. And that guy eats, sleeps, and breathes hockey. And you can tell it when he comes on the radio show. He loves him some hockey.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's been, you know, a really productive player for a long time in this league. And there was really interesting stuff about the stick too. Finding those little edges, little adjustments that can make the difference for you. Duchesne, in some ways, it reminds me a little bit of Julio Jones. I think Julio Jones had a certain rap, you know, attached to him from Atlanta that I think was just Julio Jones and management not getting along and having issues. And it's kind of the same thing with Duchesne. Duchesne played on some terrible teams. And there's, you know, like there, like basically with both of them, there's been some like, ooh, you know, is it going to be like bad in the locker room? And from everything I can tell about both, not at all. Now, yeah. The issue with Jones right now is he ever going to be really an impactful player again? Of course, we were also saying about Matt Duchesne last year, weren't we? So if the Titans can get the 21-22 Matt Duchene to translate to the 22-23 Julio Jones, they might have some. But it just reminds me of that because, as by all accounts, like, they've been great, like, behind the scenes and everything. You know, like, they're what you want in that way. It's about producing up to your contract, which Matt Duchene is doing, and then some this year.
Well, it's pretty incredible because we talked about when he signed here. He had a 70-point season, right? Scored 30 goals. You know, was really good for Ottawa, got traded to Columbus. And in the playoffs for Columbus that year, he was really, really good. So you're coming off a 70-point season, a contract year. He signs the big deal here with the Predators, you know, 7 years, $8 million a year. And I remember saying, like, all right, guys, like, Matt Duchene has been traditionally 50, 55, 57-point guy. If you're coming in with expectations that he's going to put up 70 points every year, maybe ever again, I would be cautious about that. And obviously the first 2 years, you would have taken 50, 55 points from Matt Duchene. I got to say, I did not expect to be talking about maybe a conversation with him again where you're getting back to the 70, 75. If he stays at the pace he's on right now, 80-point margin. I mean, it's incredible, really, what he's been able to do this season when you also factor in that he's not even playing the position that you signed him to play. You signed him to be your second-line center behind Ryan Johansson, and right now he's on the wing. You know, I think in a lot of ways that helps you, especially from a goal-scoring standpoint, because you are more of a shooter when you're on the wing. You're not as much of a distributor. But, I mean, he's got 21 goals in 42 games. He might score 35 this year. Like, it's pretty incredible, not only the production that he's put on the table this year, but the way that he's gone about doing it and having to basically, you know, reinvent himself on the fly, playing a totally different position.
Yeah, I mean, 19 goals in 100 games in his first two seasons here. 21 goals in 42 games this season.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, shooting 9.6 and 8.2% this year, 17.2. You know, I'm sure maybe there's a few this year that have gone in that should have gone in last year because he talked about being snake bitten, but I just feel like there's just a style. And obviously I think it's line mates too. That's a big part of this, the chemistry between those players. And it's great to play with a guy like Granlund. It's gotta be, great to play with a guy like Forsberg. But also, I think a lot of this story is finding that common ground with John Hines and kind of figuring out, you know, okay, do this and you can do this. And this actually can help you do this more. And it seems like all of that has combined to make this kind of out of nowhere season he's having.
I'm just curious from Preds fans, you know, how does, if they're able to continue this, and by they, I specifically mean Duchene and Johansson, if they're able to continue to play this way throughout the rest of the season and into the playoffs, regardless of what that means for the team and how they finish, whether that's, you know, getting to the Western Conference final or getting put out in the first round, whatever it is, like, how much differently do you view their contracts now based on the way that they've played this year? Because there are some, and there are some on the text line right now that say, well, this is great. They're playing really well. Get their value back up and then get out of the contract. See if you can trade them at that point, which, you know, at this time last year, we were talking about how those were two contracts that are untradeable at that point and that Seattle's not going to take in the expansion draft. Or do you take the approach of, all right, well, it feels like John Hines has finally figured it out with these two. They bought into the system. They're not that old. And maybe this is going to be what they are for the next few years in terms of maybe Duchene's not putting up 75, 80 points like he's on pace to do right now. But if he's 60, if he's 55, 60 per year for the next 2-3 years, you taking that if you're a Predators fan? I mean, probably so. That's what you signed up for to begin with. So I do wonder, based on the way they've played this year, how differently, if at all, Predators fans view those contracts, not only for the short term, but as they move forward here the next couple of years as well.
Well, I think the answer will be, it'll be very simply based on what they do in the playoffs. Because even with a productive season like this, you know, if you then go out in the first round, you know, then it's easier to say, okay, you got the value up. Let's, you know, look at, you know, trying to figure something else out, retool this team. If you go make a run with these guys and they keep this up and do it in the playoffs, why would you want to get rid of them? That's what it's about. right? Ryan Johansson, to me, was still kind of an enigmatic player early in his Preds career. He had a good 16-17 season, but it was that playoff run before he got hurt where you're like, okay, this is your guy.
Yeah.
That's where it's, man, that's where your money's made. And look, I mean, Duchesne going nuts on the Lightning in the playoffs was as made it was as appealing as anything else he had done in his career, right? When the Preds went and got him.
Yep. Yeah. I don't think there's any question. And look, you know, Johansson, he's been a big time. He's been a big game player. He's been a big game playoff player for the Predators. Duchesne, although there were signs last year, I mean, he scored the overtime winner against Carolina last year. Like, he doesn't have a ton of playoff experience in his career. I mean, like you said, he's played for some rough teams in the early part of his career. So it's kind of a chance for him if they get back there this year with the way that he's playing and the confidence that I would assume that he has. I agree 100% with what he said about the team. I think this team, and I've talked about this for weeks now, this team and the style that they play is more built for playoff hockey than they've been in a long time. So that's exciting if you're a Predators fan. But it's also a chance, I think, for him individually, if you can keep playing this way down the stretch of the regular season, to maybe rewrite his narrative a little bit into the playoffs. Like you said, that's when you need your big money players to show up and play. And he's not really had much of a chance to do that throughout his career. This could be as good a chance as any as he's got moving forward.
Yeah, now that you bring it up, I mean, it is amazing. You look back. So, you know, he has a series with Colorado in 2010. And then 4 years later, two games with Colorado. And then 5 years later, he has that Columbus. It's his third playoff experience in his entire career. He has 10 points in 10 games, five goals. Again, has a huge series against the Lightning in that sweep. And then other than that, four games in the bubble. And then last year's series, that's his entire playoff history. By the way, his overall number, 28 games, 21 points, 0.75 a game, you'll take that.
Not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you'll take that. You know, that's pretty good. I mean, you'd love to be point a game, but that's not bad at all. But it's actually amazing when you think about that. There's a guy who's been a very productive player who has been starving to be on a team like this. I mean, this team, even though obviously that Columbus team was good, this team he's on right now probably has the most promising outlook at this point before a postseason of his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's played in 869 regular season games and has 28 games of playoff experience.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that would surprise a lot of people.
And I know there's some Colorado fans who are like, who would want to blame him, but no, man, your teams sucked back then. He was like the only thing worth watching.
When we come back, we'll look ahead to Super Bowl 56. We'll be joined by Jay Morrison, who covers the Bengals for The Athletic. That's up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. And we look ahead to Super Bowl 56 coming up on Sunday between the Rams and the Bengals. And to do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Jay Morrison from The Athletic, who does a great job covering the Cincinnati Bengals for The Athletic. Jay, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Oh, doing great. Wishing I would have remembered my sunscreen. It's supposed to be 86 degrees out here in L.A. today. It's a cold shot from Cincinnati.
Oh, man. Thanks for rubbing that one in. That's good stuff. Oh, great stuff. So, Jay, what's this week been like for you? What's this week been like for Bengals fans as they prepare for a Super Bowl that, look, I'll be honest, most people on the outside, unexpected for the Super Bowl, even when the playoffs began and they beat the Titans, I didn't know that they would go into Kansas City and win an Arrowhead. But what's this ride been like for you and for Bengals fans as well, following along with your work?
Yeah, for me, it's been surreal. I mean, you said it. Nobody, me included, expected them to go into Kansas City. I picked them to lose to the Titans, but nobody thought they'd go into Kansas City and win. And then when it was 21-3, you're thinking, okay, here comes a couple weeks off and a little bit of a break to catch your breath, and then the comeback happens. I think for Bengals fans, maybe the best way to describe this week is excruciating. Sunday can't get here fast enough. I think they're trying to enjoy all the coverage and everything that comes along with having their favorite team in the Super Bowl, but you just get the sense of impatience, and that's kind of built in with the 2 weeks off or the week off between the conference championship game and the Super Bowl.
I want to go back to that Kansas City game, Jay, because obviously, you know, here in Nashville, look, I think it's always like, you know, the winning team did all these things right. In the losing team's market, it's just all the things they did wrong, you know. So obviously there's so much focus here on Tannehill, and there still is, by the way. But, you know, with Kansas City, I mean, I think you can look at that and say, my goodness, did they just fumble that away? You're up 21-3, you're rolling, and you do nothing on offense after the halftime. But obviously that means that the Bengals did some great things in terms of adjustments. Is there enough credit given to that side of the ball for this team and the coaching that has gone on to help this run happen?
No, I don't think there is. That's the story that I'm working on today that I will have up tomorrow on defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo. Just about a year ago to this week, I was having coffee with him at the Senior Bowl, asking him, you know, if he thought he was going to get fired. I mean, 6-25-1 the first 2 years, it would have been very easy for Zach Taylor to pick Lou Anarumo as the fall guy and start over on defense, and he didn't do that. He stuck with him, and they were just decimated by injuries last year, and there was this whole roster rebuild going on, and last two free agent classes have focused almost entirely on the defense, and you've seen it just completely flip this year. That's the one thing that the players and his assistant coaches talk about, is they call him mad scientist, and just how good he is with adjustments and talking the team down at halftime after a bad first half. And I thought what they did against Kansas City was brilliant. They won't admit this, but I think this was the plan all along, to go to that, to drop 8 and try to fluster Mahomes that way. And you have to be really patient when you're down 21-3 not to pull that out before halftime. But by waiting until after halftime, it was like the Chiefs couldn't – you can adjust on the fly, but it's not the same as kind of drawing it up at halftime. And the Chiefs just never responded to it. They should have started running the ball more and taken advantage of that light box, and they just never did. And I guess if you have Patrick Mahomes, you're going to trust that guy, but – It was a brilliant – I mean, he's made a lot of second-half adjustments, but that one was really, really good.
Jay Morrison from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jay, I'm curious from your vantage point. I mean, there's great young quarterbacks that are littered throughout the league, and a lot of them are in the AFC right now. What in your mind makes Joe Burrow different? Obviously, we know he's talented. He can make all the throws. He can do all – everything you want a quarterback to do, Joe Burrow can do. I guess I've been just kind of blown away by the swagger that he brings to the table and maybe how that rubs off on the rest of his team. What do you think makes Joe Burrow different from some of these other young stud quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think it's just that. It's that swagger. It's all the intangibles that you can't measure at the combine. And this coaching staff was in love with Joe Burrow before they ever worked him out. That was the pandemic year, and you couldn't really – get in person with a guy to work him out, and everything they used up all their allowable Zoom hours on him very quickly. They were installing the offense with him before they even drafted him. They were all in on Joe Burrow, and we saw that as soon as he got here. I mean, he as a rookie, he's voted a team captain, and it's just I think it's his intelligence, being the son of not just the son of a coach, but the son of a defensive coach. He really understands what defenses are trying to do, how they try to attack, how to beat them, and then just this tunnel vision he has. That he's, even though he's kind of getting this big glow up now with his fashion and all that, it doesn't consume him. I think he kind of enjoys it, but he is 100% focused on football. He is not a guy that's going to be going out and kind of seeing. On the road, he rarely goes out to dinner with his teammates. It's just, he is all football all the time, and he's got great physical tools, but it's the mind, it's his mental makeup that really what makes him special.
I want to go back to the Cincinnati fans a little bit, Jay. I'm just curious, you know, from your vantage point, like as a general NFL fan, I loved the Icky Woods team with Boomer Esiason, and you know that really one of the best Super Bowls, really, the Bengals Niners, and that was of course the last game of Chris Collinsworth's career. You can go back to Kenny Anderson and that team that you know also lost a close game to the Niners in the Silverdome back in '82. How does this group, you think, compare to like you know that era in terms of just how the fans view them? I know that this probably it looks like the beginning of something that could be really good for years and years, but I'm just wondering like how fans look at this compared to that era.
Yeah, I think this is far and away the favorite team in Bengals history. Just I mean, with the social media, what it is and how they feel more connected to the players, the Bengals social media staff really upped their game this year and really, really focused on fan engagement. They created a Ring of Honor for the first time, which fans have been screaming about forever. And you look back, that 81 team went last to first, and it did. It kind of took the city by storm. I was a freshman in high school. I actually went to that Super Bowl. But it just wasn't that grand of a scale back then. And then the 88 team was really good. You could see it building. You could see it coming. I think people hoped that this Bengals team would be good next year. No one saw this year, and it's just they've just taken this city on a wild ride, and I think because of that, because of the personalities, because of how close they feel to these guys with social media, I think this is going to go down as one of the most most favorite team in Bengals history, because after this year, it's going to be expected. It's going to be hard to satisfy fans with anything short of a Lombardi trophy over the next few years, so this one is just kind of a house money, let's have fun, and hey, that they're relevant again, and it's been a lot of fun.
So, Jay, with that in mind, as you look at the matchup against the Rams, what do you think of the matchup? What do the Bengals have to do to come out with a win on Sunday and win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, they have to find some sort of answer for Aaron Donald every now and then. There's no way they're going to shut that guy down, but that is the strength on weakness matchup in this game, because the Bengals O-line is bad. Everybody that's listening to this saw the 9 sacks that the Titans had against Joe Burrow. It's especially the interior of the line where they're weak. And I don't know how they're going to have an answer for Aaron Donald other than to maybe just abandon the deep game and have Joe make one read. And if it's not there, check it down to the tight end or the running back. We saw him start doing that in the second half against Tennessee. That's a key one. And then, of course, if they do get some time, how does Jamar Chase and Jalen Ramsey match up? Because I think we're going to see Jalen Ramsey follow Jamar Chase all over the field. And Jalen Ramsey is a guy that can get in guys' heads. Jamar's been pretty unflappable this year, but Jalen Ramsey famously got A.J. Green, of all people, to take swings at him, and they both got ejected in the game in 2017. If you can get in A.J. Green's head, I think you can get in a rookie's head. So it's going to be important to see if Burrow can get Chase going a little bit early, because if this game gets to the second half and Chase has 3 targets and no catches, and he could really take him out of the entire second half. And then for the Bengals defense, something they've got to get to Stafford and get pressure on him. They got 3 picks against Tannehill. They've done a good job of getting interceptions. Matthew Stafford will throw interceptions. So whether it's dropping a bunch of guys in coverage and taking out the passing lanes like they did against Mahomes or getting pressure on him, they've got to affect Stafford.
Okay, Jay, so if you were at that Super Bowl at the Silverdome, does that mean you were at the AFC title game when Hank, Dr. Defense Bulla, locked up my Chargers and Dan Fouts in like negative a million degrees?
I was. I tell everybody I was not cold during the game, but I thought I was going to die on the drive home when I started thawing out. It was just so exciting as a kid. I went to my dad had season tickets. I went to every single home game that year except the game against the Browns because my next door neighbor had a birthday party that day. My mom made me go, but yeah, I went to every single game that year, and it was a heck of a ride.
Well, if you were in the stands for that game, then you have earned the 86 degrees this week, then, Jay. Well. There you go.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. Jay Morrison from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Jay, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to join us. Enjoy this weekend. Going to be a fun one.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jay Morrison covers the Cincinnati Bengals for The Athletic. We'll come back. We'll react to what Jay had to say there. Take more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Thanks to Jay Morrison from The Athletic for joining us in the last segment. Joe Rexroad, the odds are out for the post-game Gatorade that will be poured on the winning coach. This is coming from The Athletic that was posted a few hours ago. Orange, the leader in the clubhouse at plus 200. Blue at plus 300. Green slash yellow slash lime at plus 450. Clear or water at plus 450, red or pink at plus 800, purple at plus 1,000. Apparently since 2001, orange has been dumped on the winning coach five times, which is the most of any color. So orange leading the way at plus 200 odds. Joe, your thoughts.
Very interesting. I mean, this is one of many possibilities as we do our final pigskin pick'em to see which of us will be washing Michelle's Jeep.
Yes.
You know, this is one of many possibilities for us as a prop. We got to, I mean, we're going to do six. Is Gatorade good enough? Does it rise to the level of being one of them? Do we do a halftime show one?
We'll have to see.
Or do we keep it? Do we keep it all football stuff?
Guys, I will say ahead. Call your shot was that it would be blue last week.
It's true. She did. It is true. I will say there's one prop that's out here that we're not going to do. That I feel like is a slam dunk. And it is, will a highlight video clip of Chris Collinsworth playing in one of the Bengals' previous two Super Bowls be shown during the Super Bowl broadcast? Yes or no? The answer is 1,000% yes.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason to wonder about that. In fact, I've been seeing them all week already. Former Florida option quarterback, Chris Collinsworth, by the way.
That's right. I think it's a guarantee that it'll be in there. I am interested to Jay's point. You know, we've talked about the Bengals offensive line and, you know, everybody other than Quentin Spain kind of realizes that it's not very good. The Aaron Donald part of this, I mean, Jeffrey Simmons totally wrecked what the Bengals were able to do. And look, I get it.
Jeffrey Simmons.
Oh yeah. And Autry as well, for sure. But I'm just saying Aaron Donald against that offensive line, that's gotta be keeping me up at night. If I'm Joe Burrow, like, oh boy, Aaron Donald's a little bit of a different animal. The game plan to combat against that, when as Jay pointed out, there's really no hope of you blocking him. I'm interested to see how the Bengals go about doing that in this game.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of teams run right at him, and that can be effective. You know, I mean, he gets upfield fast.
He does.
You know, and then you're going to have to – obviously, you're going to double him. I mean, that's – you can't even – you have to start there. You have to do that. And the problem is with the Rams now, they have, you know, like Von Miller. Like when the Titans played the Rams that night, they actually did a really good job on Aaron Donald. He had a sack and like two quarterback hits, but he wasn't nearly as impactful as Jeffrey Simmons in that game. But, you know, Von Miller now is a factor for them and was not that. I think they had just acquired him. Did he even play in that game?
I don't think he did.
I don't think he even played in the game. And it took him a little bit of time, but now he is a factor and Floyd's a factor. And, you know, they're just. That's to me where this game could be a problem for the Bengals. But again, we saw the Titans just, you know, somehow lose a game in which they had nine sacks. So anything's possible.
It is possible. Is there a chance? Because I've seen a couple people predict this, and I think Tim Hasselbeck was one of them. Is there a chance that we could see a defensive player win MVP in this game? And where I'm going with this is, if L.A. wins and Aaron Donald just totally dominates, like, is he winning? Could he win Super Bowl MVP over quarterback?
He can. I mean, it's just like MVP. You know, the Super Bowl MVP really forever has been like, if you're the quarterback of the winning team and you didn't have a crap game, you're probably going to get it.
Shout out to Deion Branch.
There you go. Desmond Howard.
Yeah.
Returning a kick. I mean, there's been some, you know, some other guys who have won it, but yeah, I mean, Aaron Donald, and, you know, and it's when it's a player of that of that level of profile too, who's possibly the best football player in the league, you got a better chance. So I think there's a distinct possibility there.
Do you think Jalen Ramsey, you think he's traveling, following around Jamar Chase? Sometimes Jalen Ramsey does travel. Sometimes he doesn't. He's traveled against Davante Adams before. There have been times where he has not traveled against Davante Adams, and it's not worked out very well, really, in either scenario against Davante Adams. But I'm curious to see how much damage, if it is one-on-one, and they move, you know, Jalen Ramsey around with Jamar Chase, how effective can Chase be in this game? That's going to be interesting to see.
Well, I mean, I think the Rams are going to have different coverages, and there's, you know, I think there's going to be other times where they, you know, it could be just side to side, and you're bracketing Chase or whatever. I mean, the problem is, you know, they have guys who can really hurt you if you pay too much attention to him.
Yep.
But I'm sure when they play man, that it will be him, and that's primo. That is a fantastic matchup. So I hope there's a lot of that. That'd be great.
You think Jamar Chase goes after Jalen Ramsey at any point, A.J. Brown style? They get into it on the sideline?
See, the thing is, like, Jay made a good point there. Like, if you can get A.J. Green, you know, off his game and all flustered, and that says something. But Jalen Ramsey can also get flustered.
Yes. You know?
That's the thing. It's like he can get in people's heads, but then he can also get totally outside himself too. And Jamar Chase is the kind of talent who could do that to him. So, again, that's why I want to see them match up as much as possible. That's anytime, you know, Jalen Ramsey is going up against a legit elite receiver, I mean, they're both probably going to get their shots in, and then it can really be fun. I mean, we saw Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Brown get into it a little bit too.
So do we see Tom Brady announce his return to the NFL in the immediate postgame show of the Super Bowl? When do we think this happens coming up for Brady and the Pharaoh?
Maybe during the halftime show, it looks like it's Eminem who's like emerging or something, and then it's actually Brady with Eminem hair, and then he just takes the mic and says he's coming back.
Wearing a Niners jersey, just holding it up. Jimmy G. Oh, man.
And the whole show just goes like a record, you know, like the needle off the record.
Which, what a great place to wear a Niners jersey. That would be showing up at L.A. at a Rams Super Bowl.
There you go. Well, if you saw the NFC Championship game, I'm not sure there weren't more Niners fans in that building anyway.
I think there probably were. There was a whole lot of Niners fans in the building. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their day. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.